Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me is my fearless co-pilot, partner in crime, Bryant Knox. He's been on the show quite a bit, but never enough. We always like to bring him back for at least one more. He's got so many offers from other places all around the globe, and yet he still comes back to his hometown favorite. So we're very grateful for that. Bryant, how the hell are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. I feel bad that I wasn't able to make it on during Portland's playoff run, but then again, they didn't exactly give me many opportunities.
What were we going to say?
They didn't exactly extend the series long enough to give me too many options, so we'll put that on them, not on me.
I think we had it scheduled for Game 5, and they just couldn't quite get there, and that's
yes.
We take our share of the blame there, but we're not alone.
Yes.
So we're here to talk playoff basketball, and before we do that, we definitely have to bring up the Portland Trail Blazers, which we love talking about them. They're our hometown team. We love them to death. They're like a member of the family. We absolutely mean no ill will towards them. You know, no matter what they do, they're number one in our hearts. We'd love to see them go farther in the playoffs, but, you know, they can't control what matchups they get and who's on the team, who's not, who's coaching the team, who's not, who's running the team and who's not. All they can do is go out there and ball, and they do that every night for 82 games a year. They do that even more if they can. They got to 86 this year. Knee-jerk reaction, Bryant, how would you rate the season? Is this an A? Is this a B? Is this a C? Does it need improvement? Is it incomplete? Where do you fall?
Man, it's such a tough question to answer because, you know, the truth is, from an entertainment standpoint, we can't look at sports as championship or bust. If that were the case, only one fan base would have a successful season every year. That said, you want to be competitive enough to either compete for that or feel that what you did in the regular season was valuable. And the Blazers flopped so hard in the postseason that it really does take away from their regular season. So, I mean, if I were to give it a grade overall, somewhere maybe around B-, it would have been higher than that if they had even won a game or two in the postseason. But I'm bordering on an C average season because of how badly they flopped.
There's been some chatter recently about not overreacting to four games versus underreacting to 82 games. Is that a fair sentiment in your eyes, or do you think we should be looking at this sweep and going something needs to change?
I think it's a fair sentiment in the sense that, you know, going back to my first point, that people use sports as an outlet for entertainment and for leisure. If you truly are only watching basketball because you want a championship out of it, then your priorities are probably a little out of whack, or you have some sort of vested interest in the team. But again, that said, I think that overachieving in the regular season, I wouldn't say Portland overachieved. I would say that the stars aligned for them because they avoided all major injuries, whereas, you know, so many teams in the West ended up with star players in the infirmary at some point. And as opposed to underachieving in the playoffs, they absolutely did. It's tough to say anything else. I think they were good enough to even just get a game or two against New Orleans. Clearly, the Pelicans were listening to your podcast because I was very adamant before the matchup was even decided that the Blazers should want New Orleans. I felt that that was a decent matchup. I felt that New Orleans absolutely had overachieved after Boogie Cousins went down. And so I'm convinced that, you know, the core four of Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, Nikola Mirotic, and playoff Rajon Rondo, they were all sitting around listening to your podcast before game one, and I gave them that motivation. So that's my bad.
Well, guys, if you can hear us this week, thanks for listening. But, you know, maybe next time take it a little easier on the hometown team. We don't necessarily want you to win that badly, so we appreciate you listening. We always can use a better, broader audience, but I definitely don't want to encourage Anthony Davis to play any better than he already is. He's already scary enough as it is. I mean, he's basically Kevin Durant playing center with 40 pounds of muscle on. It's just not fair. And he's got so much in his game, and Portland, as great as they are, they just don't have that guy that, you know, as much as we love to talk about Damian Lillard, Is he a guy, if you're another team, that you're centering your game plan around, wondering how you're going to stop him, or you just throw two defenders at him and force the other four Blazers to beat you? Which it seems like that's what New Orleans did, and it worked really well.
That's exactly what New Orleans did, and it worked perfectly, because without Lillard time, you really don't have a whole lot in Portland. And I think CJ ended up being the best player for Portland in that series because he had so many opportunities as a result of just New Orleans' brilliant system to hound Lillard every time he had the ball above the three-point line. You know, I'm trying not to, you know, knock CJ here, right. But the truth is we figured out that if he is your number one option, that's not a good thing, at least the way the Blazers are currently constructed.
So you know Damian's wheel number one. You know CJ's wheel number two. Who's the third wheel? Do you pay Yusuf Nurkic mega money to keep him here in town? Do you wait and see what other teams offer him, or if they offer him something? What is your move there? Because he was supposed to be the third wheel that made this whole thing go with bringing attention away from Damian and CJ. Obviously, this year didn't go as planned there, and definitely not in the postseason. So what do you do now that you've got a check to write?
As far as waiting goes, Portland and Neil O'Shea won't really have that luxury, because as a restricted free agent coming off his rookie contract, other teams are he has the right to explore other options, and there's going to be a team out there somewhere that's going to give him the max money or near max money. So it's not going to be a matter of asking should Portland give him that, or should Portland offer that. It's going to be a matter of should Portland match that. And I suspect Neil O'Shea is going to do that, just because he's so, you know, if we've learned anything about him throughout his tenure in Portland, it's that he's so defensive about his guys that he brings on board. Literally that he will do anything to prove that he made the right choice. And so to let someone like Nurk walk, I just don't see it happening. I think he matches whatever money is out there.
So he didn't draft Mason Plumlee, and he was traded away. He didn't draft Yusuf Nurkic, so is he really an Olshay guy, or is he just somebody who is an Olshay guy as long as it's working?
He is an Olshay guy because Portland fell in love with him. And as soon as Olshay realized what he had, he became an Olshay guy. You know, the fans really, really enjoyed watching Plumlee. He had a good personality and demeanor about him, watching someone that big do that. But he wasn't an Olshay guy in the way that Lillard and McCollum have been. Nurkic, you know, he created his own epidemic in Portland. Nurk fever became a huge thing. And as soon as that happened, he became an Olshay guy.
So speaking of other Olshay guys, I would assume Ed Davis is one. You know Myers Leonard is one. Mo Harkless is one. Al-Farouq Aminu is one. I mean, how many of those guys can they afford to keep in this offseason? A lot of those guys are either free agents or restricted free agents going into 2019.
I think that you're going to see the Blazers have a largely the same roster next year, because Olshay would have to get very creative on the trade market. And quite frankly, he would have to bamboozle somebody to take on contracts that nobody else would want. So I think you're going to see a lot of the same guys back next year. And quite frankly, it's not the worst thing, because Portland proved it can compete. But Olshay better have a plan, if he's still here 2 years from now, on how to get the team to the next level. Whether that be take a step back to take two steps forward or leapfrog some of the teams ahead of them.
So let's say you can only afford to keep four of your five restricted free agents, or just four of your five free agents. Who are you letting walk? If you can afford to keep four out of the five and let Nurkic walk, do you go quality or quantity over quality? Do you keep Nurkic and see if the other guys stick around at a bargain? What do you do there if you're Neil Olshay, or do you try to trade him away and get some picks or maybe some capital to pay off some of your debt?
I think you let a guy like a Shabazz Napier go. He was very, very good for you. You know, I was very outspoken this season about how well he played in Lillard's absence, and I think that he grew quite a bit. But the truth is, he still wants to be a starting point guard in the NBA, and I don't think he necessarily has earned that yet. He's clearly not going to get it in Portland, but what he's going to try to do is negotiate a contract that even if he's in Portland, he can get his way out of Portland into a starting role at some point. And so I think if you're Portland, you kind of let that idea go that you're going to bring him back on a reasonable contract because he's looking for too much for what you can afford. I like the idea of bringing back Ed Davis. He is just one of those glue guys, one of those enforcers who just means so much to your team when he's on the court. And as long as he doesn't want an astronomical deal, he's definitely worth bringing back. And then, like you said, Jusuf Nurkić, the question's going to be, does he get the max or the near max? And I feel like you just can't let him go for nothing. So I would be a proponent of signing him to a deal, matching that deal. And then if you need to shop him down the road, you can give that a shot. But to lose him now makes no sense because losing him doesn't clear cap space because he's only on a sub $3 million deal as we speak. So if you let him go, you're not getting any cap relief. It would be a huge difference if he was on a $20 million deal right now and you could let that walk to clear up space, but that's not the case.
So let's say a team with a top 10 pick comes calling and they're willing to take Nurkić and our number one this year for their number one. Do you make that deal?
Yes. I think you make that deal not to necessarily straight up replace Nurkić because aside from a DeAndre Ayton, I can't really think of too many elite centers in that sort of late 10 range. So I like the idea of maybe replacing your starting three, finally getting a starting four to replace LaMarcus Aldridge, and then you can shell out some money on an Ed Davis and potentially make him your starting five. I know that he is not a modern-day big and he doesn't help spread the court, but he is such an energy guy and a glue guy that if you have him at the rim, you're going to feel good.
I feel like he's Portland's version of Tristan Thompson. He doesn't do much for you on the stat sheet or on paper per se, but you watch him perform on the court, and the team just really thrives when he's out there. They love seeing him out there just balling around the glass. I think that's probably the best comparison for him in the NBA. Maybe a generous one because he's not necessarily starting caliber, but he's definitely a guy that can come off the bench and give you all the energy you need. He's a 110%er, but he just, you know, he doesn't have the outside shot that maybe a guy in the today's NBA at a stretch four or stretch five would need to have. But circling back to the trade question, so with Nurkić, you're interested. If it's CJ McCollum, are you even thinking about it?
You know, CJ is such an interesting case, and I'll try to answer that but kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent here because I actually wrote about CJ just today, and our fellow OSN colleague Jared Wright wrote about CJ on Monday. Both of them being, should the Blazers look to trade him? And like I said earlier, I think that CJ being your number one option in the playoffs when Damian Lillard was shut down is not necessarily a good thing. And so I think you learned a lot that as good as he is, he as your next best player or your 1B or whatever it is, isn't necessarily going to get you too far as the roster is currently constructed. And so I think if you can swing a deal where you can actually send him and, you know, keep Nurkić on board, but improve at the small forward position, whether it be Paul George like Jared Wright offered up or Kawhi Leonard like I suggested, I think having him as trade bait does make sense, and it allows you to keep Nurkić and have a more well-rounded roster.
So if you could trade CJ straight up for Klay Thompson tonight, would you do it?
Yes. Klay Thompson, very underrated because of playing behind so many bigger personalities. He is an incredible defender that people don't really talk about, and his ability to shoot, you know, whether it be off the dribble or off the catch and shoot really is a specialty. He's just such a machine at that. I would do it. I know that might disrupt the chemistry a little bit, but you gain size, you gain just so much by bringing him on board that I don't feel like you're losing much without CJ. Now, he's not going to get to the rim the way CJ does, but you have Dame to do that too, so I'm not worried.
So to close out the Blazers segment, do they need to do anything to make you feel better going into next year, or are you happy with the guys they have if they're able to keep them all?
Say that again. You actually cut out just a little bit.
Sorry. So if the Blazers stand pat going into 2018-2019, are you happy with the roster and optimistic about next year, maybe getting into the second round of the playoffs, or do you think there needs to be at least one move made? We're missing something.
That's such a tough question because I feel like, obviously,
not to put you on the spot or anything,
the reason I think it's a tough question is because it goes back to that: are you only competing for a championship, or are you competing to be competitive at any level? And I think that if you keep the roster as is, you probably don't end up with the third seed again this year, because there's no way the NBA and the Western Conference deal with the injuries they dealt with.
But how big is the third seed next year? How big was the third seed this year with the Western Conference such a logjam? Is that really something we can hang our hat on, or is that just we got a little foot in the door above of somebody like a New Orleans who was a game back?
Yeah, I think it was good experience, but I don't think it was anything beyond that. Clearly, as evidenced by the 0-4 series loss. And as evidenced by how far behind the top two seeds, the number 3 through 8, were.
Right, and you've got such a logjam 3 through 8, whereas 1 and 2 are head and shoulders above the rest. If Portland had found themselves in the same territory as Houston and Golden State, I think then you've got something to talk about going into next year. But I think the third seed, we're kind of overblowing it, that in many years past, that would have been a huge accomplishment, whereas this year, it just seems like that's where you fell in the pecking order, and especially with how many games they lost in the last month of the season. You know, we say month, but that was really only 10 games, but they lost, I think, 7 of 10. Now, you dealt with quite a few injuries there, but like we mentioned earlier, injuries happen to every team. You can't control when or where they happen. You just have to deal with it when it comes. I think that showed off that Portland's really lacking quality depth behind their starting five. They don't necessarily have a 7-8-man rotation. They've definitely got a 5-man rotation, maybe even a 6, but I think that's where you kind of have to cut it off, and then that's where you go, where's our depth? And who do we bring in next year to have somebody else that can come off the bench as a scorer? Because we really don't have that today.
No, and unfortunately it goes one step further because they don't have the assets to bring on somebody new. They don't have a high draft pick. They don't have very many tradable contracts. So, you know, kind of going back to your question of if this team looks similar to how it looks now, you know, what can they do? I think it's absolutely going to look like it does now. And I don't think they reach the third seed. I think they kind of regress to the mean.
And I think that's where they expected them to fall this year, and they probably beat expectations. And that could be where some of this misinterpreted animosity from fans is coming from. Where they look at it and go, we got the freaking third seed. We had one of the best Marches we've ever had. We had a so-so April because of injuries. We drew a favorable matchup, an opponent, even though I don't know that it really was, but a lot of people seemed to really like it. I look at that and go, okay, we're probably overblowing what happened, but are we, though? Because this is, what, 4 years in a row that they've struggled in the playoffs after a really good second half of the season. Neil Olshey is famously placing a lot of onus on the 82-game regular season, saying that should be the focus, not the distraction. But I look at that and go, okay, but there were several months in that season that you struggled to win 500 of your games, or to go 500 during your games. In a 5 or 6 month season, if you only have 2 to 3 months where you're an above average team, is that really something to hang your hat on? I mean, I know we're Portland and we'll watch no matter what they put on the court, but I just feel like whether you're looking for a championship or not, sooner or later there has to be a big push to be better and not just signing middle of the road free agents just because that's who will come here. I think at that point you save your money and wait till next year, don't you?
Yeah, but Portland doesn't have any money to save. That's the catch. And to your point about, is the third seed really something to hang your hat on? I just looked it up, and the Blazers as the third seed were 9 games behind the number 2 seed Warriors, and they were only a single game ahead of the number 6 seed Pelicans.
Right.
So, no, you squeaked out a third seed because the 4th, 5th, and 6th all had identical 48-game or 48-win seasons, whereas you as the 3rd seed only had a 49-win season. Right. So it's one of those things where, yeah, the 3rd seed looks great on paper, but with the context of where they were in comparison to both the 2nd and 6th seed, now it was just a number. It was an inevitable, you know, 3 versus 6. And at that point, you know, like you said, you'd love to save your money and really invest in the future, but even that's tough to do right now.
Yeah, and I think that's got to be the key going forward, is make moves if you can, but don't do it just because you feel like you have to make a move. I know I'm one of the fans that is clamoring for a move to be made. At this point, a big move just to see where the dust settles, but I don't think the majority of fans would agree with that. I think a lot of them would go, don't touch CJ and Damian. Definitely don't touch Nurkic, but anybody else, you can do whatever you want with. My problem there is, if I'm another team, why am I looking at any of those other players that I didn't mention? Why? What do I want from them? If they're not somebody I can build a team around, why would I trade a favorable asset to get one of those guys or even a cluster of them? Unless I'm trying to just acquire draft picks, which it doesn't seem like many teams are trying to do this year, even though this is supposed to be one of the deeper drafts in recent history.
Yeah, people are trying to acquire lottery picks, but simply moving into the first round isn't really a goal. And that's unfortunate for Portland because it's nowhere near the lottery.
So with Portland out of the mix, do you have a matchup or a team that you're really watching closely? I mean, I know Utah beat Houston tonight, which a lot of people thought Houston would have that series wrapped up pretty neatly, whereas now Utah's have shown some fire after a disastrous game one. So they're all tied up, but then you've got Golden State, who's got a two-game win over, or a two-game series lead over New Orleans after New Orleans looked so great against Portland. They looked overmatched against a fresh Golden State. And in the East, you've got Toronto and Cleveland, had a thriller in overtime on Tuesday. And you've got Boston locking horns with, I'm blanking on the team. Well, Boston's
the Celtics?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're playing Philly.
You got Boston playing Philly, which should be a really good series. Boston claimed game one. We'll see what Philly has in game two. But of those four matchups, is there a team or a series you're really watching closer than the others?
Yeah, I'm watching Philly very closely. I think that they dropped the first game of the series, which is natural for a young team on the road. But Boston is too depleted right now, and Philly is just too deep, too talented, and they shot too poorly in game one to assume they're going to do that again. And I really think that Philly has a chance to be the fourth team in NBA history during the lottery era to miss the playoffs 1 year and then be in the finals the next year. I just think that the East is watered down enough and Philly is strong enough that those two factors combined could really, you know, create history. And Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and that squad could end up facing a Warriors or Rockets in the finals. Now, if that does happen, I will take a step back and become a little more realistic and say that the odds of them pulling off that upset is not so likely. But the fact that they have a legitimate chance to make it to the NBA championship this year is pretty incredible, and I'm definitely riding that wave.
Well, and how fun would it be to see Cleveland and Philadelphia in a 7-game series in the conference finals? LeBron versus the new LeBron?
Oh, it'd be amazing. LeBron versus the new LeBron, or LeBron versus LeBron's new team next year, maybe. Like, there's so many storylines there. And I mean, Joel Embiid has basically said they don't need LeBron James. Now, he didn't use those exact words, but he said, we like our core. We're not looking to add anybody else to that core. And we are just fine as we are. And that was in response to the rumors that LeBron could make his way to Philly next year. So Embiid's confident. And if he were to face off against LeBron in a conference championship round, I think that'd be just incredible television, incredible basketball.
Well, and I mean, you've got such a talent-rich roster in Philadelphia, which I can't believe I'm saying that out loud after the last several years. Trust the process. Mm-hmm. But how crazy would it be for LeBron to go there and you could actually get away with him coming off the bench in most games? How insane is that to say out loud?
Yeah, I think, and I'll say this with an asterisk, and I'll get to the asterisk at the end, but I think that Philly could look at this and really, really make it work. I think that if LeBron wants to come there, you know, it could work. But here's my point. Philly needs to take a step back and think if that's what they really want, because they have too many young pieces that if the LeBron show comes to town, it's never as straightforward as we get LeBron, everything's, you know, rosy, because LeBron went to Miami, the drama followed him. LeBron went back to Cleveland, the drama followed him. Players oftentimes, you know, they love having LeBron because he wins, but they also don't like the disruptions. Now, here's where the asterisk kicks in. If LeBron says he wants to come to your team, you say yes. let's be real here. If LeBron wanted to go to Philly and Philly said, "Oh gosh, we're worried about, you know, Ben Simmons' development and is he going to take the ball away from Joel Embiid? Is he going to be too expensive? He's 34." They can say all those things, but at the end of the day, if LeBron says he wants to come, they'll say, okay, and they'll open the door and lay out the red carpet for him. So it's a pretty wild storyline, which, you know, going back to our discussion about the conference finals, would make that matchup so much more intriguing.
So we've got, on the flip side of that, you've got Golden State, who looks like they're well on their way to making another finals appearance. And then you've got Utah, who could give them a fight, but I think this game kind of proved that you need the best game that you can get from their supporting cast to make it happen. Does Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and these guys have enough fight in them to make this last for seven games, or do you think the Rockets will close out in five or six?
I think it probably goes six. I would have picked five if Utah didn't win today, but I think that Utah does get a win at home as well. So six is very, very respectable. You know, I'm not going to say it's a moral victory because nobody in Utah wants to talk about a moral victory. I'm not even a rookie in Donovan Mitchell, but it is a huge accomplishment. And once the dust settles and they can kind of remove themselves from the disappointment of losing that series, they should be proud of it. I just think that Houston is too talented. They play at too frenetic of a pace. And James Harden, no matter what's going wrong on the court, he's going to find a way to right that ship.
So we got a couple of minutes left, and then we got to get going. So I got a couple of questions for you before we break. Who are you picking to be in the finals? You're not picking a winner to win the championship. We'll discuss that in a couple of weeks. But who are you picking from each conference to represent their conference? I'll go first and tell you I'm picking Houston and Cleveland.
Okay, I like that. I'm going to counter with Golden State in the West.
Okay.
I can't pick against them until I see them lose, and that hasn't happened in the playoffs in quite a while. So
right.
I'm picking them. And then out East, my heart wants to say Philly. But I got to go Cleveland. I think that LeBron has just found a way to destroy the hearts and minds and souls of Toronto. And after losing game one, I don't think Toronto has a chance to come back from that. I think they'll still make it a series, but I don't think they have a chance to win. And then the Cleveland-Philly show that I'm so excited about. I'm not going to knock Philly and say they get swept or anything like that, but I think LeBron just does what he does again, and we end up with, you know, I know some people don't want to hear this, but I think we end up with Cavaliers, Warriors, part four.
I don't know that anybody would be disappointed to see that. That'll be a really good series.
I think a lot of casual fans would be, because they're so sick and tired of just seeing the same thing over
right.
and over again. But those who appreciate you know, basketball for the art and the science and the sport that it is, understand that those two together make quite the story and quite the show.
Agreed. All right, final question before we cut out. A couple weeks ago, you and I talked on this show, and I asked you who should be Rookie of the Year. I voted for Donovan Mitchell. I believe you were on the fence, but went Ben Simmons. Is that still your vote, or are you sticking with, or are you going to flip over to the Mitchell side?
I'm going to stick with Ben Simmons, mostly because the true Rookie of the Year award doesn't take the playoffs into consideration. And as great as Mitchell has been all year, I think if we were to include the playoffs, he might, kind of jump up on my ranking a little bit. but I still got to go Ben Simmons. He's such a great player with the exception of that jump shot, and he's doing a little bit of everything, which I can't ignore.
I like his game, and I like what he brings to the table, and, you know, nixing what's happened in the playoffs, I think he had a tremendous season. What I've seen from Donovan Mitchell, and maybe it's because he came out of left field and we expected so many things from Simmons, and he started off kind of slow and he got really hot, and then he slowed down a little bit and got really hot, whereas Mitchell started off slow but then got red hot and just stayed that way and came out of left field. I think that's maybe going to pull some voters away from seeing what Simmons has done all year consistently. But I do think that jump shot scares some people, because I think he made one three-pointer through the first three quarters of the season. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I think in today's NBA, somebody who shoots that poorly from outside, I do think the average voter is going to look at that and go, I can't vote for this guy.
I think it's a fair point, and I think that anybody who does have that mentality isn't wrong, because, you know, one of the things that kids do at such an early age is dribble and shoot, and right. You don't look at the other intricacies of the game. So, like, how did a player this talented skip the shooting part of it? But I just think he's so good at everything else that I can look past that, at least.
Right.
And
well, I don't think you're looking past it so much as saying he's done so many things well, I can't void him because of that. And I think you're taking the right mentality there.
Yeah, I think he's such a special player. And Donovan Mitchell's also a special player, but he's special because what he does very well. Whereas Ben Simmons does everything well, but he does everything well. Right. Like, I'm going to put an extra emphasis on everything. Again, without the shot, but I can put the emphasis on the other things for now.
Well, and he's proven with the right people around him, maybe you don't need the jump shot if you can be really good at passing the ball when you need to, or getting in tight when you need to, and maybe not having an outside shot, or at least not a consistent one. Whereas Mitchell has maybe less of a squeaky clean game to work with, and that could be why he gets voted second or third. But I think it's a testament to both of them that's their first full year playing in this league. Whether or not Mitchell is a rookie, which he is, or Simmons is, which he's not, they still call them both rookies.
Boo.
just saying. They're both eligible, so I can't take that away from them. But it is really neat that there are two rookies that are playing at an all-star level first in year one. You know, seeing what Damian Lillard did in his rookie year and Brandon Roy in his rookie year, and seeing guys carry that torch in Philadelphia and Utah is really great, because we really need to see some of these rookies becoming premier all-stars and superstars, because you can't wait 3 or 4 years every time for a player to get good. You want to see some of those guys be good out of the gate when they're coming out of college so young. You need to see that transition happen quickly on some level.
Yeah, the NBA is not known for finding superstars 5 years into their careers.
Right.
It doesn't happen. You can see strong development 5 years in, especially the guys who come out of school way earlier than they probably should have. But you just don't see superstar players who were not superstars in their first or second year. So the fact that these guys are, you know, really slaying it right now is a huge testament to what they are, but also what they can be.
Absolutely. Well, we'll close out with that. We appreciate you guys checking in. We'll definitely be back next week. We apologize for the delays in the last couple weeks. It's been hectic getting schedules put together, but we promise we'll be back in the coming weeks. We won't leave you deserted. We know there's a lot of talk coming with the playoffs and the draft and the offseason, and we won't leave you hanging. We apologize for that, but we thank you for being loyal listeners, and we'll be back next week. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. Thank you, and stay classy.